Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Hey, good morning. It's Jeannie Yandel. It's Friday. This is Seattle Now. This week, it's been a weird week for animals in the Seattle area. Keep a lookout for zebras near North Bend. Car thefts in Washington have been skyrocketing over the past few years, so also keep an eye on your Kia. And the Washington State Department of Transportation has a new employee, a drone designed to take down hard-to-reach graffiti. Author Geraldine DeReuter and Too Beautiful to Live podcast host Andrew Walsh are here to break down the week. But first, let's get you caught up. The Seattle Storm play their first preseason game on Saturday against the Los Angeles Sparks. But you'll need a passport to watch it in person. They're playing in Edmonton, Canada. You can see the Storm play another preseason game at Climate Pledge on Tuesday, and the WNBA regular season tips off in Seattle on the 14th. Sailors in the Clipper Round the World race are leaving Seattle today after being docked here for the past week. The racers came from China and sailed all the way across the Pacific. Now they're headed to the east coast of the U.S. through the Panama Canal. Seattle has been a stop in the race since 2017. And if you're trying to get your Seattle look nailed down, you're going to want some KEXP shirts. You're in luck there. KEXP is hosting a spring cleaning event in the station's gathering space tomorrow, where they're letting go of clothes, mugs, and other swag. All proceeds go to KEXP, so you'll be supporting public radio in Seattle along the way. That's it for now. Make sure to come back tonight for Evening Headlines with Paige Browning. Hey, it's Friday again. Hope you've been soaking in some warm weather sunshine this week. Geraldine DeReuter is here. She's the everywhereist and the author of the new book, If You Can't Take the Heat. Hi, Geraldine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm having some allergies. I feel like that's just the time of year. How are you?
Yeah, no, the plants are trying to kill me.
Thank you. Correct. Yes. Andrew Walsh is also here. He's the co-host of the Too Beautiful to Live podcast. Hi, Andrew. Are the plants trying to kill you?
Yeah, but it's not in an allergy way. It's more of a Little Shop of Horrors way. It's getting pretty crazy up here in North Seattle.
Oh, we better do this fast then before that plant comes to eat you. Okay, so then let's jump right into the big story of the week. It's been a real banner week for animals in the Seattle region. Let's start with a story that seems kind of tailor-made for Casual Friday. Four zebras escaped from a trailer on I-5 near North Bend on Sunday. Three of the zebras were captured by people living nearby. One zebra is still missing. So as of this recording, there is a zebra somewhere nearby out there. And I've been a journalist for 20 years, have never asked this question of anyone before. But if you saw a couple of zebras casually walking down the street, what would you do, Andrew? What would you do if you saw some zebras just like in your neighborhood?
Well, I saw in the newspaper that some people were sort of laughing at this notion, but I think I would do it. I would call 911 because I don't know the number for animal control. So I'd hope that 911 would consider this an emergency or at least give me the information I need to call animal control. I think I would do that. I would also maybe make sure that they weren't just horses with painted stripes on them.
That's fair. It's a huge concern. Just, you know,
it is.
Yeah, stolen zebra valor. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Geraldine, what would you do if you saw zebras on the loose in your neighborhood?
I feel like if you can pull off a bold black and white graphic print, you kind of have the sort of easy confidence that I assume you belong where you are.
Yeah.
So I'd probably be like, oh, yeah, no, those are they should be walking down 45th. I'm not. Why would I call 911? No, this is their neighborhood. They're probably going to a gallery opening.
That's a really good point.
I wouldn't do anything.
You start questioning whether or not you belong there. What am I doing here?
I'm underdressed right now.
I do have some thoughts about the bold graphic black and white prints, but before we get to that, I wanted to point out that we do know why the zebras were there. There was somebody actually transporting them from a farm in Winlock, Washington, to a city in western Montana. She wanted to put them in her petting zoo. And so people who lived in the area said that They saw the zebras eating grass off the side of the off ramp once the doors to the trailer opened. Some other drivers came together to help. They tried to box all the zebras in. You know, as we all know, these postings have been all over social media of these zebras just sort of casually walking around residential areas near North Bend. And then once those posts went up, a bunch more people actually came out to help, including, this might be my favorite detail of the story, someone who's a former rodeo bullfighter. Mm-hmm. Who told the New York Times that he feels like he and his wife really just kind of know how to read animals, so he thought he could be helpful. I love that. I mean, you know, I guess one way to look at the story is this is like a community coming together to help solve a problem. And I, you know, Andrew, to your point, and Geraldine, to your point, I don't know if I would approach a zebra if I saw a zebra or any other exotic animal in my neighborhood. My first thought would not be, let me go see if I can help. I wouldn't do that.
My first thought on any issue is never I should get involved here, basically speaking. Like, I don't think I ever really get involved. And you mentioned that this one of the people who did step in had an experience with animals because of his experience in the rodeo. Not only was he a bullfighter, he was a rodeo clown at one point as well, which I love that detail. The New York Times headline on it is, four zebras broke free on a highway, a rodeo clown stepped in.
That's right. Yes.
I just love the idea of him frantically, like, running to his neighbors and just being like, give me anything tasseled that you have. It is my time to shine.
I know. Once you read that headline, you can't picture him as anything but in full rodeo clown
makeup. That's true.
The whole
Do you have a barrel with suspenders attached? Oh, my God. I mean, I do love the headlines. One of the things I did yesterday is just read all the different headlines about the story because it felt like a moment of the internet being kind. But, you know, the story raises a lot of other questions. I mean, for one thing, who is selling zebras in Western Washington? Where did the final zebra go? And, you know, Geraldine, to your point about a bold graphic print, how does one lose a black and white striped animal in a green and brown state? I mean, the zebra's been gone since Monday. I don't know. I mean, what are the big questions you guys have about this story?
I think for me, I mean, I knew that, you know, intellectually, I know this. It still shocks me every time that you can own what we consider to be exotic animals in the United States. And every now and then you'll hear, you know, someone will get mauled or attacked by their own pet because their pet is a wild animal. And while zebras seem to be on, you know, what I would consider the milder end of all of that, from a kind of climate standpoint, I don't know. It feels like they would be very cold in Washington.
Yeah, you know, the reason these zebras, you know, cut loose was because they were being pulled in a trailer and then the trailer wasn't latched properly. Right. And drivers behind, even before they came out of the trailer, drivers who were driving behind this trailer saw that there were open doors, like these zebras were not secured. The driver sort of realizes it at some point. She apparently pulls over to fix the issue and then the zebras get away. And it's like, at first I was just kind of worried about the missing zebra. I remember it was very cold, I think, the night that this news broke. And I remember even saying to my partner, I was like, hope that zebra's okay. Like, I don't think that they love cold rain. That doesn't seem like the temperatures that they're used to. But then I started to get a little bit angry. And I'm not like a hot take kind of guy, but I started to think, like, is this some sort of Tiger King thing? Mm-hmm. Apparently, like, this is going to like some 7-acre petting zoo, as it was described in Montana. I started frantically trying to like kind of look for like the website of a petting zoo in Anaconda, Montana. But I don't know exactly where they were going. But yeah, it doesn't seem like something that we as humans should be doing or we as Americans should be doing.
I wonder if you should get like animal amnesty. If you escape a trailer, you now have freedom.
I want an impossible future for this zebra, which is I want the zebra to befriend another animal, just like in the Madagascar movies, where there's a zebra and another animal who are best friends and they have adventures and they go all over the world. Neither of you have seen the Madagascar movies, I assume. You've never been responsible for a small child for a long period of time. But that's what I would like for the zebra, is to befriend maybe a toucan or something, and they could just have wonderful adventures together.
Yeah, I would like the zebra to find love.
I want that too.
Wow. You know what? I think we've done some really good journalism
I'm
today.
I'm so proud of us.
I am too. I don't want to call us heroes, but I think that's the appropriate word.
So I think this is a great segue to our other big animal story this week. This was a viral TikTok about a brown bear eating a family of ducks in front of guests at the Woodland Park Zoo. So, oh, nobody can see Geraldine, but she's holding her head in her hands right now. So let's talk about this brown bear. Her name is Juniper. She's 2 years old. Her keepers describe her as sassy and mischievous. I feel like we can infer that Juniper is also a little snacky. So as they are inclined to do, some ducks got into Juniper's enclosure. They started floating around in the water. We know what happens next. The TikTok shows a bunch of kids pressed up against the glass at the zoo, watching nature happen in real time. I mean, what, Geraldine, I have to ask you, since you're holding your head in your hands, what would you do in that situation? As a zoo-going adult, what would you do?
Well, so I'm not in charge of any small children, which is, you know, a good thing. But I can't fault Juniper. You know, I eat duck too. I prefer mine cooked a little bit more. I did watch the TikTok videos. There is, they've edited them. So they are not, there's a blurred out part. It's not gory. If you're worried about there being gore, there's not gore. And when I say videos, it's because this is not the first time Juniper has done this.
That's right.
Yes. This is the second reduckening of Juniper's space. And so, look, I don't want to blame the victims here, but the ducks do keep returning.
The Woodland Park Zoo staff is aware of this issue. They know that Juniper's done this more than once. We actually got a video from a KUOW listener with, you know, another video of Juniper eating ducks a different time. So, you know, maybe it's time for the staff at the Woodland Park Zoo to rethink some of the design of the zoo itself. I mean, they say that the zoo is an urban oasis. It naturally draws native wildlife to our grounds. Andrew, could we maybe ask the humans to do something about this? Maybe have the zoo be a little less attractive for native wildlife?
Man, I don't know about zoos. And don't worry, I'm not getting on like a bandwagon here about it. I literally don't have a lot of knowledge or strong opinions about zoos. I will tell you that I don't go to them very frequently, and the whole thing definitely seems, if not problematic, complicated, right?
Yeah.
Because the idea is, the argument for them is, well, they're educational sources. It's important for our youth, I think, especially to connect with nature and learn about nature and see things that they wouldn't be able to see otherwise. Well, if that is the argument, then maybe the youth need to know that bears eat ducks.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's the lesson. I don't know. Yeah. I'll be honest with you, though. I didn't even try to watch. I didn't know that these videos were redacted. I didn't want to see it.
Yeah,
it was going to make me sad and grossed out. So I didn't even click on them. So
what are you
saying about
me, Andrew?
I'm just saying that you have some darkness in your heart.
Oh, well, that's okay. Yeah, no, I knew that. That's cool. Okay, that's fine.
Do you mind if I turn it on you, Jeannie?
Okay, turn it on me. Let's do this.
I'm just kind of curious, as somebody who does oversee young people, like, because I don't have any kids. I don't know. Like, how would you feel if you were there with a young kid? What would you say to them? Would you turn them away from the scene?
Now we've landed at the place where I find this story a little frustrating. There was a parent there, a mom, who took this video, posted it on TikTok, described the whole situation as a Nat Geo train wreck. And then later came back to social media and said, don't worry, my kids are not traumatized by this. My feeling is sort of like, why is the mom on the hook here? She just took her kids to the zoo. I mean, granted, she didn't have to post the video. She didn't even have to make the video. But I don't think I would necessarily turn my kid away from this. I wouldn't be like, hey, honey, look over there. Mm-hmm. Juniper's having a snack. Let's talk about the circle of life. But sometimes these things happen. Focusing it on the mom who was just trying to have a nice day at the zoo with her kids is a little bit misguided here.
I saw some beluga whales having mommy and daddy times one time in an aquarium. And I was in my 30s and it really stuck with me.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Sometimes animals do animal things. That's Mommy right. and Daddy time, you mean they were folding laundry or paying bills or something, obviously.
They're watching Netflix, yeah.
Yes. Okay, let's stop talking about animals for a moment. Let's talk about one of our other stories this week. The Seattle Times took a big look at car thefts in Washington State. This probably isn't surprising to either one of you, but overall, the number of car thefts have gone up nationally, locally, since the pandemic. They spiked particularly high in 2022. I personally feel like I often hear about either car theft or attempted car theft from people that I know. This is a very common point of contention on neighborhood groups, if you're part of any neighborhood group online. I'm wondering if either of you have ever dealt with this.
I have like a little Vespa type scooter, and that was stolen off the street. I'm going to say that was pre-pandemic, though. That was maybe four or 5 years ago. We have one car, and at the time we had one car and one scooter. Getting a scooter stolen is nowhere near on the same level as getting your car stolen, especially if you need your car to go to work and everything that's wrapped up in that. But it's a sort of a destabilizing feeling when you go out to your vehicle where you think it's parked and it's not there, and then you start, I think the experience with almost everybody is you start questioning, wait, did I park it in the wrong spot? Where did I leave this thing? And then you realize, oh, it's been towed. And then I thought it was towed just because we left it on the street too long or something. But then eventually when we tracked it down at an impound lot and you opened up the little like kind of boot area and you realize none of your stuff is in there, but a bunch of tools, half a pack of cigarettes and whatnot are in there, you start to realize, oh, somebody else has been in my space. And it's a very destabilizing feeling.
My perspective is always, look, the cars do show up. And, you know, my friend's car showed up, I would want to say 4 days after it was stolen. And it had a bunch of cool stuff in it. There was like a leather jacket, some records, I want to say. And then there was a cooler full of really nice steaks. So he felt he was like, well, I came out in the green on this. So that's pretty cool. But I think the problem and a lot of the articles talk about this is the people whose cars are stolen are usually the ones who can least afford to lose their cars. Right. So it is people who use their cars for work. It is folks without alternate means of transportation who need to get somewhere in order to sustain themselves.
One of the things actually that the Times found when they were looking into this is, you know, on the list of the cars that are most often stolen, many models of Kia were up there. Many models of Hyundai were up there. These are both relatively affordable cars, right?
They're not luxury vehicles, right? We're not talking about BMWs or Audis.
Yeah. And unfortunately, one of the things that we know particularly about Kias is that they're not that difficult to steal. There's actually a viral series of videos made by folks who call themselves the Kia Boys. Have you heard of these? They teach people how to steal different models of Kia and Hyundai cars with a USB cord. I'm wondering, I mean, if Kias and Hyundais are, in fact, so easy to steal that you can do it with a USB cord, are we at the point here where we need to start pushing the car makers to start changing things? Is this no longer an issue of individuals getting, you know, a lock for their steering wheel?
As the free market capitalist expert on the show, why
economist Andrew Walsh, what do you think about this?
Why doesn't the market just correct for that? I mean, I'm quite literal when I say I rented a car, I think about a year ago, and they gave me a Kia, and I loved it. I was on a road trip, and I came home, and I told my partner, I want to get a Kia. She wasn't into the idea for other reasons, but also she's like, are you kidding me? We'll never own a Kia. They're easy to steal. You would think that that would be like the first thing you think of when you think of a Kia these days. You would just think that people would stop buying them.
That's a really good point. And I was thinking about that as well when I was preparing for this. I mean, why hasn't there been an issue with purchasing these cars, given that they're relatively easy to steal? I mean, one of the things that the Seattle Times pointed out was that one of the reasons that we have so many car thefts in the region is because until very recently, police pursuits were restricted. Starting in July 2021, police were not allowed to pursue certain kinds of crime activity, which meant they weren't pursuing people who were stealing cars. That law was just overturned. So we're now at a point where police can pursue car thieves. Do we think it's worth it to resume police chases over stolen vehicles? Geraldine, I want to start with you because your face is saying a lot right now.
I seriously, come on. Do we really think that the reason that car thefts have gone up is because SPD sees someone stealing a car and they're like, well, we can't fall. Like, that's just not what's going on. And frankly, I don't think that car thefts are the sort of crimes that are stopped when they happen. I think they've timed it right. The amount of minutes that it takes to steal a car, it's like somewhere between 90 seconds to 3 minutes. It happens so quickly that it's not the sort of thing that you can stop in the act. So the idea that the pursuit legislation had something to do with it, I mean, like, that, nice try.
Have you guys ever seen The Big Lebowski?
Oh, have we seen the Big Lebowski?
Yeah. Do you remember when the dude's car is stolen and then they find it in an impound lot? And he says to the police officer, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to catch these guys? And the officer just starts laughing and says, yes, we have our best officers on it.
Yes.
They're working on shifts in the lab. Like, I believe... I believe that underscores the traditional police response to stolen vehicles.
I mean, and if Jeff Bridges can't get police attention...
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some kind of good news out of this. Vehicle thefts are actually down in the first quarter of 2024. Law enforcement officials say, of course, that they want to see a steady decrease before they're going to say that this problem is even close to solved. So we'll see what happens there. But one last thing before we go. So the Washington State Department of Transportation has begun experimenting with drones to take graffiti down along state roads. This is part of a larger project to try and tackle graffiti between Tacoma and Seattle. There's a demonstration video that came out last week. It shows this drone equipped with a spray paint nozzle spraying paint on a wall to try and cover up a tag. And WashDOT really wants to use it to get to graffiti in, you know, particularly difficult spots, you know, high up on walls, on bridges. I mean, do you notice any hard to reach graffiti? Is that something you're looking for?
It's not something I'm looking for. It's something that's hard to, you know, not see. Again, in this neighborhood that I live in along Aurora, there's a lot of, actually, along here, you see a lot of, like, you know, businesses that have gone out of business, then the building just stands there, and then it attracts all kind of graffiti.
Yeah.
And, you know, of the issues of Seattle, like, I don't think the graffiti is at the top of the list, like, which is kind of funny, because people who live outside of Seattle do think it's part of the biggest problem in Seattle. This is a true story. I was visiting my family in Ohio, maybe, let's say, a year ago or something, and my dad, who... consumes different types of media than I do, had mentioned that he had heard that graffiti is a really big issue in Seattle these days. I'm like, how is that the headline that is hitting the Cleveland news consumers? Like, how is that the number one story of Seattle these days? So I do think that the story of graffiti in Seattle is a little bit fraught, honestly, and a stand-in for some, you know, some other issues and conversations that maybe we should find. Having said that, it bums me out when I see somebody take a nice looking wall in the neighborhood and then just kind of totally destroy it. I'm not talking about nice murals. I'm just talking about the really ugly, lazy graffiti, a tag here and there. And if we have drones that can kind of take care of that, good use of drones, if you ask me.
Fair enough. I want to play a little game with you both, though. So there is a specific kind of paint that the Department of Transportation is using in these drones. It has its own special name. Geraldine, can you guess what the State Department of Transportation anti-graffiti paint is called?
I want to say something like graffino, like something like no graffiti. Like, what would it be?
No, I think that's a pretty catchy name. Andrew, what about you? If you were to name this State Department of Transportation paint, what would you call it?
I don't think I can do better than that. Tag me not, tag be gone.
These names are so much better than the actual name of the paint. The actual name of the paint is, hold on to your hats, DOT Gray.
Oh. DOT Gray.
Oh, wow.
Department of Transportation Gray.
That's a bit of a bummer. I really was hoping it was going to be no graffito.
Nope.
There, we got there.
I don't know what better place to end it than on that. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you both so much. Geraldine DeReuter is the Everywhereist, and Andrew Walsh is the co-host of the Too Beautiful to Live podcast. Thank you again, you two. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thanks for listening to Seattle Now. And extra thanks to the generous listeners who support this show. Today's episode was produced by Vaughn Jones. It was edited by Jason Pagano. Our production team also includes Caroline Chamberlain Gomez, Claire McGrain, Andy Hurst, Paige Browning, and Patricia Murphy. Greg Kramer does our theme music. Seattle Now and KUOW Public Radio are members of the NPR network. I'm Jeannie Yandel. See you later.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's Teen Dance Ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.